trailer. Beneath a canvas covering were baskets and crates brimming with loaves of bread, ears of corn, wheat, and even hand-loomed bolts of fabric. In the distance, across acres of thorny shrubs, towered Mount Rushmore. Ryan glanced over at Mildred. She tried a jittery, reassuring smile on him, but he was too tense to even try to return it. He knew she was more worried about the people left behind in Hellskell than what awaited them. Hellstrom sat in the back with them and 10 Sekhmen. He had dropped all pretense of the relaxed, friendly host. They were soldiers preparing for battle. Ryan wore his long, fur-collared leather coat. Beneath it was a combat harness, and from it hung four Grens. Two were V-40 minis, and the other two were DM-19 incendiaries. Though the Sig Sauer was snugly holstered at his hip, a mid-sized Walther MPL submachine gun was clipped to the harness. The metal stock was folded sideways to allow for carrying comfort, and the perforated barrel could spit out 550 rounds per minute. Four extra clips of the 9mm ammunition were attached to the harness. He had decided against carrying his Steyr bolt-action rifle. If any fighting was to be done, he figured it would be up close and dirty. The SSG-70 was strictly a long-range weapon. The silk scarf with the lead weight sewn into the lining was wrapped around his neck. Mildred was similarly attired and outfitted, with the same kind of grenades. Though she still packed her ZKR 551 target pistol, she had chosen, at JB's recommendation, a Heckler & Koch MP5 from Hellscale's impressive armory as her second weapon. It was a fairly lightweight and compact submachine gun, constructed largely of stamped metal parts and heat-resistant plastic. Ryan had considered the MP5 since he had fond memories of his Heckler & Koch G12 caseless rifle, but he felt its fixed wooden stock would interfere with his movements. Still and all, he was glad Mildred had chosen it. As the journey continued, Ryan found himself drifting off, lulled by the rocking motion of the AMAC. Despite the almost superhuman stamina he possessed, he had his breaking point. Too much tension, too much bloodshed, and even his endurance could drain away. His decision to take Mildred was logical, based primarily on her knowledge of 20th century history, psychology, and technology. If the anthill was indeed a cryonic deep freeze, as Hellstrom had said, then her background would prove invaluable. Also, she was a good person to have at your back if the going got tricky.
Are you bored, Caudle?
Ryan opened his eye and gazed at Hellstrom.
Just thinking.
About what awaits you after you get up the nose?
No. About what I'll do to you when I come back and find out you've mistreated my people.
A little premature, aren't you? Besides, there's no need to worry. Unless circumstances warrant otherwise, their status as guests won't change.
That's good. That's real good. But listen to me, Lars, and believe what I say. Harm any of them, and all hell won't hide you from me.
Hellstrom's shoulders stiffened. He glared at Ryan and opened his mouth to say something. Then he shut it and glanced away. Ryan settled back, repressing a smile. Though Hellstrom held the high cards, he was still unnerved enough by Ryan's self-confidence to take the threat seriously. The AMAC retraced the route of days before, rolling through the valley, past the Sioux battlefield and across the bluffs. There was no sign of the Lakota whatsoever, and Ryan wasn't sure if he was happy about that. Once the wag was parked, Hellstrom took the very pistol and inserted a red flare cartridge into it. Accompanied by a trio of Sekhmen, he left the vehicle and climbed to the top of the ridge. The mechanical beetle zipped from the direction of Lincoln's nose and hovered above and before Hellstrom.
You have the merchandise.
Yes, all of the highest quality, too. What do you offer for it?
The beetle pivoted slowly, its glowing photoreceptor eye turning toward the AMAC.
We will make that decision once we examine your goods and ascertain if they meet our present needs.
Then we shall remain in the area until you contact me with your offer. Is that acceptable?
If you withdraw back to the valley, then it is acceptable. Return to this spot 48 hours hence. Understood?
Understood. Will you now make preparations to receive the merchandise?
Yes. You are familiar with the procedure.
As it had done before, the beetle retreated across empty air, ascended, twirled, and skated back toward Mount Rushmore. Hellstrom entered the AMAC, his face glistening with a sheen of perspiration. He mopped his brow with a handkerchief.
Almost time.
Hot out there, is it?
Where you and that before-time woman are going, you'll be praying for some heat.
The AMAC rolled over the bluff, heading for the boulder-strewn base of Mount Rushmore. Above it, vast and exuding an ancient sadness, towered the ruin of Lincoln's Head. As the vehicle got closer, Rand watched something lower itself from the huge pit of Lincoln's right nostril. Like streams of metallic snot, four steel cables connected to a long, flat platform descended from the nasal passage.
Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your golden nose hair.
When the platform reached the rocky earth, two Sekhmen left the wag and pulled it away from the cliffside, while others busied themselves unloading the crates of crops and homemade goods.
Your transportation has arrived. Time to get ready.
Ryan and Mildred ran a quick inventory of their equipment and ordnance. A pair of small radio transceivers were tucked into the pockets of their coats, and they donned the headsets, inserting the receiver plugs into their right ears. Then they walked to the pair of metal containers at the rear of the AMAC.
Hurry up and climb in. I don't want to make them suspicious.
They slid into the metal-walled containers, feet first. Each held a small oxygen tank with a length of flexible hose extending from the nozzle. The hoses terminated in breathing masks, which fit securely over the nose and mouth. It was an extremely tight fit for Ryan. He had to lie in a fetal position beneath the bottom tray that held human organs and dry ice. It was dark and cold, but the air was breathable. Still, he felt a stirring of claustrophobia.
They're ready. Move them.
Ryan felt the container being heaved up and carried out of the AMAC by at least four men.
Place them here.
The knife wounds on Ryan's shoulder and arm hadn't yet begun to heal, and the jolt set them to stinging. Ryan assumed he was listening to Mildred's container being loaded onto the platform beside his. A jerk shook the container around him, and he experienced a giddy rising sensation in the pit of his stomach. He could feel the platform swinging gently back and forth, and he tried not to think of what might happen if the container slid off into empty space, spilling him, dry ice, and human viscera all over the rocky ground. Ryan figured the platform had reached the nasal passage. The rising motion suddenly ceased. The platform swung forward and dropped a few inches.
Barter and exchange report, record of the month of July.
Ryan grasped the butt of the Sig Sauer. He touched the transmit stud on the comm in his pocket.
Mildred, you with me?
So far, I think we're alone.
Me too. On the count of three, let's open up.
Do you mean 1, 2, open, or 1, 2, 3, open?
Ryan couldn't help but smile. He placed his fingers on the panel latch.
1, 2, 3, open.
Ryan shouldered the panel up. He shed his mask and squirmed out as quickly as he could. As he got to his feet, he saw Mildred rising from behind her container. They grinned at each other, then surveyed their surroundings. A naked light bulb provided a dim overhead glow from a low ceiling. Feeble light filtered in from the tunnel in Lincoln's nose. A few feet away yawned a doorway chiseled out of solid rock. A series of worn stone steps led up to a dull gray metal door. The circular chamber wasn't very spacious. A large winch occupied most of the space. He also noticed that it was very cold in the room. Mildred pulled a pair of black leather gloves out of a coat pocket and slipped them on.
Must be around 40 degrees Fahrenheit in here.
It's tolerable.
If you enjoy winter sports. Time to see what there is to see. Keep a watch for those beetles.
Ryan unleathered the Sig Sauer.
Stay on triple red.
As they eyed the metal panel, searching for a doorknob or latch, it suddenly rolled upward. Both of them leapt for cover on opposite sides of the stone chamber. Ryan crouched down behind the cable-wrapped drum of the winch, and Mildred melded into the shadows at the far corner. A man strode into the chamber. He carried a clipboard in one hand. He was a pale, burly man of medium height, his gray hair so close-cropped that the scalp could be seen beneath it. His face was as craggy and as furrowed as the stone walls around him. His attire was a dark blue coat and slacks with a white shirt and red tie. Ryan had seen pictures of costumes like that. They were referred to as business suits. However, the coat was threadbare, and the trousers so worn through at the knees that flashes of pale flesh beneath could be glimpsed through the fabric. But despite the poor condition of his clothes, his black shoes were impeccably polished. Ryan noticed he wore a rectangular plastic-coated badge on his lapel that bore his likeness. There was only one word on the badge. It read simply, Bob. The man marched to the container that had concealed Ryan. He plunged his free hand into the bed of dry ice
and picked up a plastic-shrouded heart